This is 3P Theory, the podcast for AEC professionals seeking to elevate their knowledge on green building strategies and practical design collaboration for sustainable mindsets, bringing you change makers, innovators, and sustainable leaders who have positively impacted the industry. It's time to get inspired, motivated, and fired up to take action towards a greener planet. Here's your host, Mike Brown.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the 3P Theory podcast. I have a pretty interesting set of guys here to introduce you all to about some interesting topics that I think is very relevant with respect to the building industry today. We have Sean Ribble with Greenworks and Kevin Wallace with Designworks. And so if we could just start off, Kevin, I guess you can start first to just give me a brief introduction about yourself, and then we can pass it off to Sean and then hop right into it.
Sure. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about Designworks and this particular type of financing to work on adaptive reuse projects. Sean worked for 3 years to get market awareness around the opportunity to do adaptive reuse with this creative financing. Designworks was formed 3 years ago. About the same time, PACE funding was made legal in state Texas, regulated state Texas, and with the goal of working on sustainable and resilient buildings, our existing urban infill stock, and making it usable and flexible for the next generation of building owners and building users. So we're a full-service architectural firm and specializing in adaptive reuse.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. Sean?
Yeah, Mike, thanks for having me. And so my name is Sean Ribble. I'm the director for Greenworks Lending. I represent the Mountain West and Texas region on behalf of the firm. We are the largest CPACE direct capital provider. We span currently 24 states, eastern, western seaboard, as well as northern Midwest. We've done over 350 transactions nationally, and we're backed by over $450 million of institutional capital. Our firm specializes in just CPACE financing or property assessed clean energy, where we work alongside firms such as Designworks to value engineer for rehabilitation as well as adaptive reuse and redevelopment of existing commercial real estate. The goal of it being to reduce energy consumption and carbon emissions by the way of rehabilitating, you know, measures such as your lighting, windows, your HVAC, insulation, roof, anything that contributes to energy consumption or water consumption. Our financing is, like I said, 100% direct capital. But the beauty of it is it's 20 to 25 year fixed rate non-recourse money that is secured by assessment. The program is backed and adopted in the legislative form for the state of Texas with a way of really incentivizing and inciting change as it relates to energy efficiency and water conservation, as well as economic development and revitalization for our communities throughout Texas. So that's who we are.
Awesome. I appreciate those introductions. And as I mentioned before, I think it's very relevant. Just because, you know, when I think about sustainability and also about reuse, just adaptive reuse and things of that nature, and being able to either make those facilities more efficient, upgrade them, and really being able to capitalize or leverage some of the existing infrastructure that's available. And when we think about sustainability and energy efficiency in general, you know, the majority of the building stock, roughly 80%, is existing building. So So that's where opportunity lies. I'm sure, Kevin, you've seen a lot of this on some of the redevelopment, especially the way that communities and certain areas and developments, whether it's in Dallas or other areas, are wanting to kind of have this live, work, play scenario for these developments to really bring in the new generation of young professionals, existing people and things of that nature in the Dallas area. And so as it relates to adaptive reuse, I guess post or going into post COVID-19, where do you see some of the opportunities, and what are you guys doing to leverage or I guess realign on the design side?
Well, I'm actually the opportunities they actually being improved. Real estate is a boom and bust cycle, and it relies on the boom and bust cycle. So when we look at adaptive reuse, typically you're looking at a building or a developer who wants to buy a building that has lost some of its value or its luster and needs a gap between its appraised and, you know, same value and its existing purchase price. So right there, we need a bust cycle, which, you know, COVID is leading us into, and for those value-add projects to come on the market. And once you find those market, those value-add projects, then they become ripe for the adaptive reuse. And literally within the last 2 weeks, Sean and I have had, I've actually had three meetings with developers, and then those are going to lead to another round of meetings with Sean and myself over the next couple of weeks. Anything in a commercial office building that wants to look at more of a reorientation of the building to more of a condo style walk-up office from a centralized lobby. But I'm looking at properties over in some of the smaller markets around the city as developers are thinking, well, if we're going to be, let's say, near Cedar Creek Lake, their second homes are all been stayed full throughout the summer. So now they have a workforce that's working from a remote location, and yet they need, you know, some business support services locally to where they're living in right now in their second home. So developers are saying, well, there's an opportunity out here to take our existing, you know, downtown building stock or centers that are around those smaller communities, buy those and upgrade them to the standards that the workforce is used to back in the urban setting. And the third option was actually some of our existing developers are taking a look back and saying, well, I just remodeled my project in the last year or two. Now they're looking at their financial stack or the financial situation and going, well, if Base is available to help me buy out some of my debt from the past remodel that was eligible, then they're looking at taking just from a standpoint of stabilizing their financial structure. So it runs the gamut, but we're starting to see a lot more. The phone's ringing, finally. So it's been 3 years of getting to this point for me here in Texas, but if the phone's ringing and developers are seeing opportunities start to pop up because of COVID-19.
Yeah, you know, I can definitely see that. And kind of as you alluded, you know, every market is a little different. But here, I guess here in Dallas in particular, you know, we have our unique challenges and opportunities as well. And with specific opportunities in terms of financing, you know, the PACE program has been around for a while. And I know that at least here in the Dallas area or Texas area, and you can speak to this as well, Kevin, I'm sorry, Sean, in terms of being able to really only focus on existing buildings. And I know you gave a brief introduction of PACE financing, but for a lot of these facilities that may be a little bit older and trying to not only bring them up to code and things of that nature, there's opportunity for owners to be able to do this, you know, with some, this kind of unique financing mechanism, where they're focusing on how are they able to leverage their energy efficiency upgrades, even build in maybe resilience improvements to the project, water conservation, and sometimes even renewable energy. What are you seeing on the forefront of developers and owners trying to apply this to, I guess, their existing building retrofits?
Yeah, it's a great question. So just to kind of backtrack, you know, the program has been around for about 3 years, but to your point, it's become really a point of tremendous interest on a statewide basis, but also a national basis. I think COVID's contributed to that, but just also what's going on in the general marketplace and interest on an energy efficiency standpoint. My background is banking. I was a community banker for 10 years. Fell in love with the program concept because of kind of what you're alluding to, and that is, this is the best form of public-private partnership in that, you know, the state has allowed capital markets access to, you know, tax assessment as a securitization tool for us to then to be able to deliver capital financing on a long-term fixed rate basis. The reason that framework is so effective for PACE is because we can then align our financing with the energy cost savings generated from the improvements. And so part of the key component to PACE in Texas is they want to see one key metric, and that is savings to investment ratio, meaning that the energy cost savings generated from the improvements over the life of that loan offsets the cost of our principal and interest payments for that full term. And so based on that, we're financing 100% of the hard and soft costs of a project. You know, we can essentially allow you to borrow for retrofit, you know, up to 20 or 25% of the property value without having any money out of pocket, but then also the energy cost savings pays for the loan. And so purely on that basis, it's a way for developers and property owners to either revitalize or rehabilitate existing buildings, or as Kevin had mentioned, being considered of kind of isolation techniques or ways to optimize a building from an architectural perspective in mind of COVID while also, you know, rehabilitating the lighting, the windows, and the HVAC. And what you're able to then do is, you know, harness basically the energy cost savings from what we call kind of the low-hanging fruit measures, being the lighting, the windows, and the HVAC and insulation, which is at the core of any rehab project anyway, but being able to essentially look at it from an architectural and engineering perspective and utilize or leverage those cost savings to then utilize 100% financing. And so not only is this a way of kind of pushing, you know, public interest as it relates to, you know, revitalizing old building stock or addressing blighted properties as we can work alongside opportunity zone financing or historical tax credits, which we've done a lot of, you know, but not only that, but you're able to kind of utilize us as an economic development tool. Because if you're able to borrow 20-year fixed rate money that's non-recourse and transfers with the sale of the asset, what that does is it attracts public interest for rehabilitation of properties that have previously gone untouched. One of the largest projects we've done in the state of Texas was $9 million to revitalize the El Paso first Hilton high-rise at the center of the plaza in downtown El Paso. And that was $9 million of T-Pace alongside historical tax credits for a previously vacant eyesore in the center of downtown El Paso. And so we work alongside groups like Kevin's because, yeah, it's easy to factor this in on just a simple rehab, but it also attracts investment from an institutional side to revitalize, you know, projects that are off Main and Main, that are in peripheral markets or underserved communities, because we're agnostic to that. And we actually, our core business model is revitalization efforts in a lot of those peripheral markets. You know, we're looking at projects in lower Rio Grande Valley, Aransas Pass, you know, El Paso, kind of on the periphery. Obviously, we do a lot in the MSAs and primary metropolitan areas, but there's still a demand need for peripheral markets. So I think that's the benefit that you're finding with the program as well.
Yeah, and I've actually had an opportunity to work with some feasibility studies with my current company and my previous company. We actually worked with you guys, I think as a former colleague of you guys, with Beck. And so, you know, going through that process and, you know, on my side of things, evaluating a project from a performance standpoint, you know, we do the energy modeling up front early, identify opportunities, try to place some valuation around that and how that impacts the building, and being able to leverage that on top of, you know, obviously the energy savings that you're going to be able to reap year over year, is being able to couple that with, you know, this unique financing mechanism. And one of the things that always, you know, piques my interest is, with such a great program like this, you know, why aren't there more projects seeking this type of financing? Because when you think about this, and even the other incentives that are available, and you start to bundle those up, whether it's, you know, 179D or, you know, other grants and programs offered by the city, state, federal level, you know, I almost think of it as, you know, maybe developers or owners kind of have this lazy financing mechanism, or I don't know what to call it, but do they just not know that this is available, or do they see it as a too arduous of a process to go through? What are you seeing? And Kevin, too, feel free to chime in.
I'll go first, Sean. I'll be brief. And because coming off a number of interviews with developers who are looking, and I've tried to introduce the topic of PACE to them, and I mean, you hit the nail on the head. The developers that, if the adaptive use, the entrepreneurial developer, the typical size of their organization, they're kind of incentive and weary, and they see a lot of paperwork just in the traditional programs to save a little bit of money either from the utility or from the state, and say they don't have the manpower for it. The cost benefit ratio is too small. So it takes time to get this embedded into the market as a viable, really, it's a very minimal paperwork requirement to get to a PACE approved assessment and then move forward with your loan documentation. So, but it's over and over again. There was two things. What originally there was something built into it, which is the senior lender had a consent, and let Sean talk to that here in a minute. And that's being overcome, particularly with the efforts of people like Sean and Greenworks. But what I'm overcoming over and over again is like, yeah, it's some incentive program. I don't have the time. There's enough money in it for me. So I don't want to fill the paperwork. So it's more of that issue from the initial stages of looking at building the financial stack. So Sean, go ahead and take on from there.
Yeah. You know, I think in a positive sense, you look at PACE as kind of a disruptor to traditional capital stack structure and finance. It's coming in and delivering something that's atypical and that we're not secured by an actual deed of trust on the property. So it just runs counter to the conceptual or traditional thought as it relates to financing. And so, you know, the reason that we've been successful on the lender consent side, and that is one of the larger hurdles, is because I understand the nuance of CPACE as it relates to the concerns and questions that a traditional bank is going to have, both from their loan committee and corporate chief credit officer, as well as just from their relationship manager or regional president. And that is, does this prime our senior loan? What impact does this have on my, you know, position as it relates to controlling the asset? And at face value, you look at it and you say, well, you're secured by a tax assessment, so you're displacing me. But when you actually talk about the nuance of CPACE and formulate an understanding of the fact that we can't accelerate our note and we don't have any enforceability as it relates to calling our note due, they start to get more comfortable, especially when you're doing these rehab projects and we're maintaining the deposits of the CPACE financing upfront in an escrow account at their institution. Then they see there's no funding gap, and they also know that we can't prime their loan and we can't foreclose on the property. When you start going through those nuances, they get more comfortable, but you have to get granular, because at the face value, to Kevin's point, it's a lot easier to say no. And if you're a developer, you know, what we do to be successful is that 100% of the process is controlled in-house by us. We are not some intermediary, we're not some production office. We underwrite all the credits in-house, we do all the disbursements in-house, and we also do the servicing and own the paper. And so we're actually kind of a quasi-community bank in the way that we control all facets of the process. And we also white glove handle the approval and documentation and everything for CPACE. So, you know, at first glance, at basic details on the project between the budget measures and just general value upon completion, I can tell you what you're going to be qualified for with CPACE. I can run traps on potential issues as it relates to Greenfield or, you know, if the county has opted in, but we can do that very quickly and have a clear line of sight in terms of what the approval process is. And if you're in the stage, and Kevin knows this better than anybody else, of formulating your capital stack, it's pretty easy for us to get consent, because especially on these adaptive reuse of rehabs, the bank gets to retain the senior loan position, the deposit relationship, and all of our funding is earmarked for measures that are explicitly improving the asset itself, both from a cash flow perspective, but then also a tenant retainage perspective. So what we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months for the PACE program in Texas, I mean, the program total originations have eclipsed $110 million. And so when you look at that, the vast majority of that has occurred over the last 12 to 18 months of the three-year program. So you kind of look at the trajectory, you know, I will be remiss if we're not doing, you know, 100 to 200 million on an annual basis to the program in Texas. And I think that's the way it's headed. And it's ironic to say this, but what's happened with COVID and the market pullback of capital markets and traditional bank financing, they haven't gone away, but just their leverage profile has decreased. And so that's an opening and an opportunity for us to step in and be accretive and help work alongside the senior lender to retain business development, but not over leverage. And so it's actually been a huge benefit to our program, especially in, you know, existing projects that are midstream and need recapitalization or something to that effect. We're doing that on a regular basis. So it's been a really beneficial thing for us. But that being said, we want things to get back to normal as well. I don't love living. that needs to be heard. There are a glimmer of hope on the periphery as it relates to what COVID impact has had.
On that topic, sorry to take a different path here, but you don't necessarily have to speak to this, but if you have any experience or any insights, feel free to chime in. But, you know, I've been working closely with Senseware, who has some technology around IAQ monitoring for indoor air quality. And they have started to work with some of the lenders around crafting a position to fund through PACE air quality monitoring and upgrades for existing facilities, which I think is a huge win, especially for existing buildings. I know we're doing it on the new construction side, is how do we try to enhance these facilities so it's safe enough, or at least that the tenants feel safe enough to come back, right? And then ongoing operations, how can they maintain? Because a lot of people may just kind of throw a blanket scenario and say, well, we'll just increase outside air by 30% or we'll dial that up. Obviously, you're going to take an energy penalty on that. And so being able to try to find a balance, because increasing outside air still may not solve the issue, right? Especially if you're not monitoring. So Do you have any insights on that? And have you seen any projects try to leverage this at all?
Yeah, and I mean, I'll let Kevin speak to this as well, but utilizing CPACE allows you to kind of wrap in other measures to justify that cost expenditure. But then also, you know, from an architectural design perspective, what we like is that you're looking at the building holistically and how to kind of offset that energy offtake through other measures that will kind of interrelate with that improvement to the site. So CPACE is a way to address those necessary evils, especially in light of COVID, and, you know, allow for the energy savings and improvements to kind of offset the cost of that improvement. So, yeah, I mean, we're seeing a lot as it relates to air quality and ways to kind of keep up with the times on building quality control. And I'll let Kevin speak to the other part of that. But yeah, I mean, CPACE is an easy way to kind of leverage and harness the energy savings as well as address other components to kind of offtake some of that burden for those improvements, both from a financial perspective, but then also just optimizing building performance from an architectural design perspective as well.
I think Sean pretty much addressed it. I mean, again, we're rehashing the use of PACE and optimizing our building performance in both energy and water conservation. So energy conservation. So our market, our designs are driven by the demands of our users, and our users are, in order to feel safe, are going to force our operators of our building, owners of our buildings to improve, upgrade in multiple ways that impact, that are PACE eligible, I guess what I'm trying to say. So it's going to be this is going to last long enough that it's going to impact the way we view our buildings and our built infrastructure for the next, 10 years, not just the year or two of the social distancing we're going to be required just because we don't have a vaccine. So it's going to have a significant impact. As you spoke earlier about the live, work, play, and that integration and combination of how that's all executed, it's going to be very impactful to the way we as designers, architects respond to it, both at the granular level at the building, at the city level, at the urban, even out to the street, because that's going to be incorporated even more so. And how do we partner up with the cities and partner up with the building owners and communities to incorporate more of the outdoors over the next year? And how permanent is it going to be incorporating the outdoors with the way we shop or go to restaurants? So to me, it's an exciting time. Chaos is always an opportunity, and COVID is certainly creating at least a confusing environment that we're going to have to find our way out of. And it's going to take, I think, PACE is a great mechanism to fund methods to get out of it.
Yeah. And with that too, I mean, Kevin, I'm sure you see this a lot on the design side, whether you're working on an RFP and then you start to go through each of the phases of design, is there kind of a sweet spot that you would say to really optimize the opportunity for projects that want to pursue, PACE from an adaptive reuse standpoint? Or let me phrase it another way. Is there a point of no return where it's too late to do for a project?
I'm sorry, you broke it. It's too what for a project?
Too late to implement for a project.
No, I'll actually let Sean grab the second half of that question because he's got some great answers for that. But the sweet spot, I mean, it's just traditional architects. Like, the sweet spot for an architect is the sooner, when the developer is talking to his inner circle or his friends and buddies, saying, I have a dream, I want to buy this building, or I want to convert this building into something different, or I want to make it better. When he's talking about that dream, that's the sweet spot, because that's when we can have the most significant impact as designers, not only to the opportunity to upgrade his building, but also then to put his money where it's going to have the most impactful influence on his users and on his bottom line. When we talk about value engineering, it's value engineering when it's applied to the back end of a project might save you 5 to maybe 10%. When you employ an architect at the front end of a project, we can save you 20% or redirect the 20%. So you're really getting the value out of your dollars, not trying to save money in your bank. We're putting the money where it's going to have the greatest impact on your bottom line, on your operating costs. And having an architect talking to you when you're dreaming, that's when you need to be talking to us.
I love that. I love that. I love the way you said that. Nice. And Sean, so, I mean, in your perspective, is there a, there's probably not necessarily a point of no return. It's just that your opportunity will be diminished, I guess, because you can design for it up front if you know you're going to be pursuing it, opposed to just saying, okay, well, here's a project, let's see what we have kind of thing.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, it's as my old CEO of my prior bank used to always say, it's never fun to assemble a car while you're driving it. And so the best way to maximize the usage of CPACE is, you know, for us, we're looking at it on the basis of eligible measures and 20 to 25% of the property value upon stabilization. How those proceeds are utilized is where Kevin comes in, because at the end of the day, we're the money. We're going to make sure that the savings to investment ratio is there, work alongside the engineer, but the return on your investment and optimizing the use of our proceeds comes right down to what Kevin had said. It's square one when you're doing the design and architectural and, you know, overview of the actual project itself, because, you know, you have a finite resource of capital based on the program for CPACE. You know, obviously it covers the vast majority of these rehab projects, if not all of it. But how the systems and the design of the building itself interrelates and speaks to itself in terms of the measures you're installing and the flow of the building contributes tremendously to the return on your investment as it relates to the leverage of CPACE. And so bringing us in at capital stack formation from the PACE perspective is a lot easier, because when you're courting senior lenders, it's a lot easier to say we're going to utilize CPACE and then utilize the senior lender, because, you know, we financed a large project in Dallas and we had three or four different institutions that we're looking at on the senior lender side. And the borrower basically said, whichever PACE or whichever senior lender consents to the PACE is the one I'm going to work with, because you replace the most expensive part of the capital stack, right? And so whoever is going to play nice with the PACE provider is who we want to work with. So when you're putting together the capital stack, bringing us in early on, we can issue an initial term sheet, a basic understanding of what our financing looks like, generally based on the project cost and scope. But how the return on your investment plays is directly reliant on, you know, value design that Kevin brings in terms of the architectural review and the utilization of our proceeds on that rehab or adaptive reuse. So the earlier, the sooner, the better, because, you know, if you're bringing us in midstream construction, like, we can recapitalize the stack and utilize our proceeds, but the return on your investment from how you're actually addressing the building design, that ship has sailed. I mean, it's a lot easier to do that on the front end and have all parties speak to one another, because it's a lot easier to do it that way, but you're also going to get a lot better return on the funding that you're putting into the project.
Yeah, let me circle back and give a little more color commentary. So just talk about ideal time to involve us. And here's a story just this last week where I was contacted by a developer who's looking at the value-add market. She wants to buy some commercial buildings. And her first response to me was, you know, Kevin, I really want to upgrade the appearance of my buildings. That's first on my list of priorities. And then she said, eventually then I'll replace the lighting systems and the mechanical system. And I said, that's actually an ideal project to turn it the other way around. If you replace your lighting system first, that savings investment ratio on the lighting system and the mechanical system allows you then to do the upgrade to your exterior windows and class that you want to improve your appearance of your building, which wouldn't qualify for PACE on its own. But by adding the lighting that you're deferring and mechanical system, now you can do everything else you want to do to improve the appearance, because it's also PACE qualified projects, but they need the lighting system to do it. So she's, by turning it upside down or turning her priorities around, she's able to do everything she wants to do. And I don't know if she's going to need to get debt. We haven't got that far yet, but at least she's got a much more robust opportunity to improve her building sooner with no money down. So that's a good color story, a conversation of the story we're trying to talk about. When's the ideal time to talk to us as the architects and the PACE lender?
So, no, I love that example. I'm sure that they appreciate you guys jumping in to help them, you know, identify that. Because I think a lot of times, you know, due to just traditional, I guess, pathways and processes, especially in an attempt to streamline, whether it be design or just construction, some of that may be lost. So that's great that you're able to reveal that to them. I guess in terms of, and I used to spoke about the El Paso project, I guess, tell me a little bit more about some of the outcomes and results of kind of maybe your most successful project that you've done. you know, and how that played out, and maybe even some of the challenges that you overcame in the process.
Yeah, you know, obviously on larger projects, it just takes a lot of time with the actual engineering and the design and things of that effect. And this project's about 18 or 24 months old, but you know, a lot has changed over the last 18 or 24 months because the program administration and overview has become a lot more seasoned and streamlined a lot of things. And even right now, they're being proactive on leverage capacity on individual project for CPACE, where it used to be 20%. And now they've kind of had a call to arms call with the underwriting groups where they want to move that to 25% because they're seeing kind of a reliance on CPACE greater than a 20% LTV basis. You know, I think the biggest hurdles and the biggest things that we deal with isn't on the architectural side. It isn't on the engineering side. It's general awareness of the program and getting everybody comfortable with, you know, the senior lender consent, and also just kind of utilizing CPACE as it relates to the capital stack and understanding really how we function alongside the senior, and that we're not running counter. We run in tandem with them from an underwriting perspective, debt service coverage ratio, and combined leverage. We're not here to just push money out the door, you know, results be damned. I mean, we're looking at it on a combined leverage basis to make sure that it's fitting with the property and that we're working in tandem with the senior lender to optimize these improvements to existing assets. I think a lot of the trepidation and a lot of the misinformation on the program has kind of gone by the wayside, just purely from a lot of these groups that have gotten comfortable with it. And now if you understand CPACE and how to use it appropriately on these rehab projects or adaptive reuse, it's a competitive advantage because your cost of capital is half of a lot of the traditional financing sources as it relates to mezzanine debt or preferred equity. So if you understand how to use the program in tandem with the senior, you know, the structure that we've seen time and time again is I've got my ducks in a row for acquisition financing. I'll buy the asset and then I'll loop in Kevin and Sean to, you know, value design the property and basically optimize CPACE to do the vast majority, if not all, of my rehab. And with that design, you're able to basically rehab the property. And then if you want to sell the asset, you don't even have to pay us back. And if it's an office building and you have triple net leases, you get to pass off the cost. And so, you know, the flight to using CPACE, although we're all driven by green and we want to see a reduction of carbon emission, I don't think anybody out there is saying that, you know, they don't want to see that. But the reason that CPACE is being utilized is because the economics speak for themselves. The reason I left the banking sector to join in this private capital realm is because I saw for the first time public-private partnership that was driven by private markets but served public interest, and the economics behind it were feasible and they spoke for themselves. And that's why we see it doing what it's doing, and we're now getting repeat business from existing relationships because once they understand it and realize it's not, you know, some scary process that's going to extend their time frame because regularly we're waiting on the rest of the capital stack to get their ducks in a row, they just use us for repeat business because it, as opposed to doing a pref equity raise or structuring mezzanine debt with covenants and requirements, we're a consistent well that you can go to where the structure and all the requirements are going to be consistent on every transaction for the most part.
It's interesting because, you know, when we start to play this out and start these conversations with owners and developers, like you mentioned before, it kind of takes time for them to be able to open up to that. But having the right people in the right place at the right time is really how they can really leverage this, especially on those types of projects. I mean, we spoke to a couple of ideal project types and things of that nature. You know, I would love to follow up with you offline as well to see, you know, are you guys seeing or collecting, or have you collected enough data at this point to really say, well, you know, for projects that are existing buildings to a certain, you know, age that have to be redesigned, upgraded to 2015 ICC standards or, you know, ASHRAE 90.1 2013 standards, typically what's kind of a savings or opportunity that project may have kind of thing, which I'm sure you guys are maybe developing some of that, because that may help owners and developers identify that as well, especially for certain regions and states that have already adopted certain codes, especially some of the ones that are a little bit more aggressive, to really understand, well, you know, this is a win-win, even on top of what you already mentioned for projects, because I think what happens a lot of times is that project developers and owners think that they have to do something additional And a lot of times, especially for those projects that are in more aggressive energy codes and or, you know, if they're pursuing LEED or WELL and things of that nature, they're already doing a lot of this stuff. It's just capitalizing on it and being able to have people like you on board to make it to come to fruition.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. I think it's already something that's happening, and we're a far more creative and beneficial form of economics to help assist with that. But then also, you know, a requirement of the program is getting an engineering review to ensure that there are projections, and there's also an independent third-party review of that engineering analysis that takes place. So, you know, up front, we have initial estimates of what that would look like, and, you know, we lean on, you know, the contractor or subcontractors giving us an idea of what the performance of those improvements are. But, you know, as far as qualification under the program for the savings to investment ratio, and I know Kevin can, you know, agree with this, if it's a 1970s or 80s building, if we're not able to get a savings to investment ratio of 1-to-1, we're either buying the improvements, I don't know where you're getting them, or you're not engineering it to meet code, because just purely on the basis of effective building age, you know, we do the engineering to really get an idea of what the true energy cost savings are, but purely based on effective age of the property and what the scope is and measures, I can give you a pretty general idea of what that looks like. And we also have tools if, you know, contractors or subcontractors say, hey, here's what the estimated energy savings looks like. We have a tool that's called an energy calculator. It basically compares the turnkey cost of the full system, basically the CPACE dollar amount that we're financing over that 20-year term, and compares it with the annual, you know, projected energy savings to see what your net cash flow looks like after that 20-year term, to give you just a general sense of what the savings to investment ratio is. But keep in mind, I'm not concerned about qualification, but what that true cash flow looks like, we do get a third-party audit, and that's mandated by the program. So, you know, we do have a pretty good idea of what that looks like. Obviously, there's variability based on building use, tenants, and things to that effect. But, you know, I think we've got a pretty good system for getting an idea and a handle on performance and return on investment from improvements.
Well, it sounds like, you know, Kevin and Sean, you know, you guys are the dream team to have on a project. I mean, you've got design. Obviously, you've got some engineering partners, Kevin, as well, on the financing side. I'm sure a lot of our listeners would love to follow up with you guys and learn more. Maybe even after listening to this, you know, a couple of projects come to mind for them. What's the best way that they could reach out to you guys?
My phone number will be on your webpage, so 972-672-1172 is the best way to get a hold of me. I work 8 to 8, so reach out to me. And I love being in the field. That's where my developers are dreaming. That's where I need to be with them, is in the field, not in my office or not at the house. So you can find me anywhere around Texas once we open back up again, out there in around abandoned buildings or value-added buildings with my developers any given day.
Yep, and obviously you can find me on LinkedIn, but also my phone number is 469-688-2335. So same with Kevin, though. I'm no stranger to walking abandoned buildings or anything like that, so happy to do it. But yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on. Kevin, thanks for the invitation, and Mike, thanks for hosting.
Awesome. Thank you guys again. Hopefully we'll talk again to you soon.
Absolutely. Let's keep the dialogue going, Mike. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to 3P Theory with Mike Brown. If you like our show and want to know more, check out 3ptheory.com or please leave us a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. Join us next time for more insightful knowledge on high-performance building design.